Welcome to the Next Brave Thing podcast. My name is Ella Hooper, and I believe that breakthrough is on the other side of bravery. This podcast features brave stories, emotional health, and creativity to inspire you to take your next brave step. Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of The Next Brave Thing. I'm your host, Ella Hooper, and today I'm joined by the beautiful Julia Gentry. Thank you for joining me today.
Glad to be here.
So excited. So some of you will know Julia's mum, Nora Abel. She came on my podcast, and we really dug into limiting beliefs, and I was really introduced to you through your mum, which is amazing. So you are a author, a life coach, a pastor, a mum of five, a wife. Am I missing any title there?
I think those are great. That sums it up.
Great. Well, I was first introduced to your work because I have done a lot of personal coaching myself, but it was the first time your mum was leading one of your programs through your book, Dream I Dare You. And it was the first time I'd been a part of group coaching where I actually felt really supported by your curriculum, because I think sometimes curriculum can take you to a certain level, but there was something about your work that really took it deep. And so Julia's book is called Dream I Dare You. And initially when I got the book, it sort of sat on the shelf, not because of you, Julia, but because of the stigma around the word dreaming. And so I don't know if you find that a lot, is that when, especially I'm 35, so dreaming is different to when I was 18. And so do you find that a lot with people's approach to your work and dreaming?
Oh yeah, Ella. I mean, that's why I didn't want to write the book. I mean, that was my whole approach. You know, like I felt very God led, you know, in writing this book. And so when the title landed, it was not my idea. That was not a topic I was ready to talk about. I mean, I'm a very practical, tactical girl. And so it was really challenging for me. And I think, you know, for a lot of us, it's like, I think we all have visions, dreams, goals, right? Fill in the blank. And at some level, what you start to realize is once you start to chase those enough, you start to realize that it's actually not about the vision or the dream or the goal. It's about who you become on the way. And so for me, like I had to live this out in order to be able to share this message. And so that word dream for me, I mean, it had to flip-flop me and my whole psyche around it. I had to wade the waters of my own limiting beliefs that I didn't even know that I had. I mean, it was one of those that it blew my mind, and I had to really readjust my heart. And so when people struggle with that word or the curriculum or the life group or whatever it is right out of the gate, it's like, I'm like, I get it. It's not what you think it is, but it's also why people are not getting the results that they could be getting. And so that's why, I mean, right out of the gate, the book is an invitation to kind of rethink this whole concept of like, what is dreaming and what is it not? Yeah. And so if people read that first chapter, they see this is not a normal dreaming book, and then the rest is history.
And that's what it was for me. I think I got a couple of pages in and you started defining, like you created your own definition of dreaming. And it was especially because I've done a lot of work around neuroplasticity and going deep into my subconscious belief system. And so when you started talking about dreaming, your definition, and I wish I had the book with me, but I'm in Australia, so I don't have it. But your definition of dreaming was about going so deep in yourself and it's sort of going into alignment with from heaven to earth perspective, where there's no lack. And so I think initially out of the gate, I was such a dreamer, but then disappointment happened and I got so connected to worldly realities around lack that it created so much disappointment that changed the way I saw dreaming. So I think that's why there was resistance for me. But what I love about your book is it's like eating steak. And I think a lot of people, when they are going on a healing journey, there isn't a lot of parameters of like, I'm actually going to be like a midwife and help you through this dreaming process and go ahead of you. And that's what you're like, is like a midwife of like, I'm not going to have your baby for you, but I'll help deliver that child for you.
I love that you're saying this. So Ella, it's why moms run for me at the playground. I mean, they see me coming and they're like, dude, this girl doesn't like talking about the weather, or really, she's going to ask, how's your heart? And she's going to mean it. And like, yeah, it is. I mean, but for me, I think that this is why this message was so needed, is because, you know, Mark Twain says, it's not what we know that hurts us, it's what we think we know that just isn't so. And there's a lot out there around dreaming. There's a lot of books, there's tons of vision planning. I mean, we've all been there, we've done that. And generally the number one reason that we aren't seeing our dreams manifested is because of that pain of disappointment, right? I've had a dream once and it didn't come true, or I've held onto that dream for a decade and I haven't seen it, or I prayed and God answered their prayer, but not mine. And so what we do is we completely shut off our hearts, but that doesn't mean that God has shut off his portal of abundance, right? That this has nothing to do with God. This has everything to do with our hearts. Mm. And so for me, this book was really about the framework to prepare someone to dream again with God. It's not a book to at the end, you're gonna be like, these are my dreams and let's create this strategic plan. It's going to prepare your mind, your heart, your spirit, your soul, so that you can dream in alignment. And so that you can actually come back doing the things that you were born to do and the way that you were, with the right mind, the right heart, right? The right dream set. You know, these sets are important. And so it's actually a book that's supposed to guide someone back to the place that they're really ready to do that again.
Yeah.
And that's what we're seeing time and time again.
And that's so cool. And even just watching my group going through it and watching us, well, we form such a bond, like, just from doing the work, because you share so vulnerably your story. And it's so beautiful because I think I love how it's designed for accountability and connection. And I mean, they're to this day are such my support system. It's so amazing.
So cool
that, you know, it came from this book and this journey for you. But tell us like where this all began, because it comes from somewhere, like pre-book. Tell us about how this all came about.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it was my husband and I, we were at a point in our lives that we call it our midlife awakening. You know, what most people would call it a midlife crisis. And for us, we had come out of a really interesting season where we started our first business really, I was very young, I was 21 years old. And we hit the market spot on. We were doing short sales back in 2008. I mean, we hit the market spot on. And so we did very well, very fast, only to land $100,000 in debt living in my mom's basement. So when I say that we kind of hit the top, making a ton of money doing like, I mean, we really felt like we were living the dream. And then all of a sudden to land that much in debt a couple of years later was my first step into, oh man, maybe there's more to making money than just making money and more to business than just the techniques. And so that's when I really started doing my work around mindset principles, right? And just diving deep into the power of the mind and neuroplasticity and just like how the mind actually works. That was a fascinating journey for me because, again, growing up in the church, I know the word of God. And I think sometimes what can happen in a church culture is that we also leave out the very physical, practical parts of what makes us human, right? And how that interacts with the spiritual side of things, right? Even though we're spiritual beings, we're having a very physical experience. And so in my journey, I wasn't actually really taught some of those things. And so that was the next phase for us that really, I think, supported us in getting out of debt, right? We found our next American dream again. You know, we had the house and the cars and the 2.5 kids. And so at that point, to be totally honest, Ella, like we had climbed the ladder that most people wanted to climb again. And it wasn't easy, but, you know, we did hard things. But we still found ourselves crawling into bed every night saying, God, is there something more? Because now here we've done all the things that people say you should do to be happy. We've quote unquote mastered our minds and yet our souls just really felt unfulfilled. And so we did what most people don't, but we just decided to sell everything. And we're like, let's go on an adventure and let's do the last thing on our vision board. And so for my husband, this was when, you know, he was living his dream. I mean, if you were to sit down, him and I have very, very different experiences of this RV travel because he loved it and his soul was alive. And we had three kids under the age of five. So for me, going to a new place every other day in a way like that I couldn't control, and three kids. And like, I realized that I was a control freak and that I actually liked my routine, and that if there was a box, like I wanted to control that box in the narrative. And like, it really revealed to me that I think I have some problems that I've not dealt with. You know what I'm saying? Like, and I had done like all my daddy issues, and like I'd gone to therapy and counseling and did all the Tony Robbins. And, but I was like, man, what are these really deep seated issues that now like I'm living the dream, but yet emotionally I am not connected in a way that I'm would say that I'm living alive. And so that really started my journey as to what the book is now, of like, I had to lean in. And this is the same time that I felt very, very motivated to write this book. It was after I kid, but I watched The Greatest Showman, which I swear changed my life. And it was a vision. It was an open-eyed vision that I got around a world that just felt very similar to me, of like, I'm here, but I'm not living. You know, I am shuffling my feet, going through the motions of life, but I'm not connected. And I'm the glory of God is not like a well and alive in my life. And so it was there that I personally just leaned in for my own sanity. And it's turned into a book and a community and a movement and a conference. And, you know, it's really created just the framework for so many people to start living fully and freely and dreaming with God again.
Wow, that's amazing. So I like love, we've hit on it a little bit, this idea around abundance. And especially like for me, I think a huge inhibitor to dreaming was I remember feeling before I moved to America, I'll never have enough money to pursue my dreams. And, you know, I can imagine going, you know, into debt can be very triggering. And so tell me a little bit about your philosophy around abundance, because it's a huge component in the book. And, tell me what you think living abundance is, what that looks like.
Yeah, I mean, I wish that I could tell you, Ella, that I knew what abundance was as we rebuilt our lives and even as I wrote this book. And to be totally honest, I don't think that I knew. I think it's really been in these last couple of years that I've really leaned in to understand what abundance is. If we look at Maslow's hierarchy, which very religious people would be like, wow, that is not a real, well, but it's an incredible map of how we live as people, right? Maslow was a man who charted out the human condition, and he put it on paper in a way that you're like, oh, that explains why nobody quote unquote actualizes. Why? Mm-hmm. Why? Because I am so committed to my safety, my security, my stability. And if people love me, and if I belong, and if I'm actually successful, that I never actualize, which you and I know that we would call that heaven on earth, right? So it could be worldly terms in very like biblical context. He just didn't use that. And so what can happen is that I'm so focused on the bottom of safety, security, stability that I can't even wrap my head around heaven on earth. And yet, especially if you're a believer, we're supposed to be living from heaven on earth to this reality. But what happens is there's life and trauma, and we aren't safe, or we're not secure as we grow up. And so we kind of build this, you know, this narrative. And I say all that for some context is because I think that when I was getting out of debt, and even as I was leaning into build this book, I mean, I was really into probably that willpower zone, which is not scare, not abundance, right? Willpower is that self-reliance of I can do this. And who's it that, I mean, okay, some level for people who need to get out of bed today, you can do this. You know, like, I think willpower has its place. I think willpower can get us out of bed in the morning. I think that willpower can get you going, but willpower is not, you're not getting out of the boat and walking toward Jesus. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, you're not going to bring heaven to earth. You can do earth well, but so for me, Ella, my first shift was probably into willpower. And I started to push, and I pushed well for many years. I mean, we pushed to see, and we did. But what I've learned about abundance is a pull. Abundance is comprised of grace, stewardship, and honestly, authority. And so abundance in my mind now is the thing that pulls me to continue to dream with God, is that it's like, it is such a place of from love, from victory, from complete, from vision. But it takes some time to get to that place.
Yeah.
So my steps are not steps I would suggest, is really what I'm saying. My steps were willpower, do hard things. Then it was like, okay, do hard things in character. And then it was like, you know what? I'm just going to say I'm bold. I'm just going to be bold enough to do the things that God's asked me to do. I'm just going to let him do the rest. That's where, if I could tell anyone, just skip the other steps. Mm-hmm. You know, like, do what you can do. But true abundance is when we're like, dang, I just know that there is more than enough. And so I'm going to live from this place of more than enough. And I'm going to do what I can do, but I'm just going to let God do the rest.
Yeah, that's so good. I love that you bring up Maslow's hierarchy of needs, because I think you're right. Like, we hang out in our needs for belonging or safety, security, finances, the bills paid and those, but then we never actually reach into full actualizations, like, you know, and something that you write in the book, which is a lot of coaching programs I've seen explore limiting beliefs, but you came up with this concept of limitless vision. Can you speak mm-hmm. into what is a limitless vision?
Yeah, well, and I think, again, you know, limiting beliefs that I write about in the book, it was, I don't want, I love words. Words are so amazing to me. I think God's word is incredible, but I think that there's just power in words. And so I think we all of us know a lot about limiting beliefs, but most of us don't know what our limiting belief is, yes. right? Or it's a real, like, off-putting answer, like, I'm not good enough. You're like, well, it says everybody.
Yeah.
Do you know, like, everybody could say that. And so I look at purpose, or this limitless vision, is that God created each one of us specifically to play a certain role in his bigger picture. And so if he's created this limitless vision, which is abundance, right? It's exceedingly abundantly more. And just when you think you're clear, it's bigger, right? That there's also the limiting belief that's very specific to our lives. Mm-hmm. So there's specificity that's super important that most of us don't quite get that specific.
Yeah.
And so the limitless vision is the piece that's supposed to open us up to that place of full manifestation, heaven on earth, actualization, dream vision, right? You could fill in the blank with any one of those words. They're all in that same. But it's to train your mind. So you train your mind. This is what it says, renew your mind every single day to go, okay. And for some of you who are like, no, I'm on the bottom of Maslow's hierarchy. Like, I am not safe. I am not secure. I don't have enough. Then your first step is saying, well, if I did, mm-hmm. if I lived in a world of abundance, right? Because sometimes we try to mantra our way through this, like, I'm bold and I'm beautiful. But internally, your limiting beliefs, you're like, no, you're not. Not right. Believe that. And so we're like mantra-ing our way through life, and we're not actually developing rooted truths mm-hmm. within us. And so where I started, Ella, is I started to say, okay, if I lived in a world where I could create uninhibitedly because I was loved unconditionally, what would I do? That's my vision. So my vision is something that I never had. Mm-hmm. I was a little girl who my world got rocked. My family was torn apart. I learned to control and it worked. And so creating uninhibitedly did not come normal. It was natural. God gave it to me to do, but I learned fast and hard to not do that, right? So when I landed on my vision, it actually brought a lot of pain for many years. My vision was very hard to wrap my head and my heart around. Mm. And I had to, for you, when I say this, years, I mean it. If I lived in a world where I could create uninhibitedly because I was loved unconditionally, what would I do? Mm-hmm. And it started to create neuropathways. It started to create healing in my heart. It started to create some dream sets. It started to go, well, okay, for the sake of the exercise, I would write. Okay, what would you write? This book. Right, like that was the book today, The Impact Today, was a byproduct of me just slowly starting to get there to where now it is the world I live in. Mm. It is why we keep doing what we do. It is how we take huge steps of faith, is that when people are like, yeah, but there's not enough. It's like, I don't live in that world.
Yeah.
That's not the piece of heaven that I want to create. And that's not the world that I live in. But it took, right, that habitual practice. It took pattern interrupts. It took remapping my brain. It took creating a safe place for my heart to understand what that means. It meant getting rooted in scripture. It meant practicing awkward until awesome. I mean, so the limitless vision is a way to actually say, okay, we can't keep creating our future based on our past, but that's what we do, mm-hmm. right? I look at my past and I throw it on my future. Well, I can't, or I look at my present circumstances and I throw it. I can't do it because there's not enough money. Well, there you go. Like, then don't be mad tomorrow if it looks like today. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I'm saying? Or like, I could never have that because I didn't have enough growing up. Okay, well then don't be mad tomorrow if it looks like yesterday.
Yeah.
what we need is, I actually need a vision for what's possible, what's prophetic, what's a dream for my life. And then I have to learn how to start making decisions based upon where I'm going, not where I'm actually at.
That's so good. Yeah.
It's huge. It's simple. I mean, again, it's simple, but it's really stupid hard.
Yeah, but I loved that you created that simplicity in your work, because the way that the work is set up, you actually do a few weeks on really honing in on what your limiting belief is. And what mm-hmm. was cool is in the book, you have like a ripple effect of how that limiting mm-hmm. belief is showing up. And it's actually like so enlightening when you realize, wow, mm-hmm. that limiting belief that I created when I was a little girl is affecting my finances that way, my relationships that way, my relationship with my body that way. It's like filtering through all those things. And then what's beautiful in doing the work is you start really crafting your limitless vision, which is what you were talking about. And I know for me, like, and even talking with people, being a coach myself, is people are looking for the outside thing to fix an internal thing. So people yeah. go, oh, I want to become a Hollywood executive. I want to become a New York Times bestseller or own a business or whatever. And it's just so like general that it's yeah. like you need to actually get really connected with your heart about what is like, you know, makes you come alive. And I remember when I started crafting my limitless vision, then we took it through the ripple effect of what would it look like in my family finances if I lived mm-hmm. that way, or my relationships if I lived that way. And because I'm in actually quite a big waiting season, sometimes the things that I've battled with is like, oh, when this comes through, then I'll feel like this. Mm-hmm. When this happens, mm-hmm. then I'll feel like this. But what the limitless vision created for me is, I remember when we like nailed it, and it was like living in a joy, like living in a place where everyone is fully loved, free to express themselves, joyful collaboration, creating uninhibitedly. I think I stole that from you. But it was like this like place. And then I went into my job where I was teaching a class, and the whole, because I was like posturing that in my heart and meditating on that, I literally manifested that experience in front of me. Mm-hmm. And so it was like, mm-hmm. oh, this limitless vision isn't far off and I have to do X, Y, and Z and really rumble through and work through my limiting beliefs. It was like just a heart posture of like, I'm actually going to approach today like we're all fully yeah. loved, we're living joyfully yeah. collaborating, creating yeah. uninhibitedly. And that's what manifested. And it was a sweet moment of like, I'm made for that moment. So yeah. then you start being on the lookout for it. So that's why I love your work. Like it's, everyone should do it. It's like so cool. But I want to dig into something that, because I know that control has been a thing for me, but it's manifested in different ways. Mm-hmm. And so what did the journey going from like controlling to creating uninhibitedly, because that's a lack of uninhibited is like yeah. all that yeah. self-protection is gone. So tell me that, mm-hmm. that road, that journey.
Yeah. I mean, I'll give you the shortest answer that felt like it took forever. And it did. I mean, this one was probably one of the greatest ones to let go of. And I think it really boils down to, it was an identity thing. So what happens with our protective mechanisms is the fact when I practice it enough, I become it. So I actually over time don't think that I'm controlling. I think I'm a controller. I don't think I'm avoiding. I think I'm an avoider. I don't think I'm just procrastinating. I'm a procrastinator. It goes from a verb to a noun. You know, so what happens is now my behavior starts to create my identity as opposed to my identity creating my behavior. And that's the world we're living in right now, is that because I've been behaving like this or I feel this way, that's who I am. That's not true. That might be fact, but truth and fact are two totally different mm-hmm. things. And so for me, I think I was willpowering myself to not be controlling for a long time, but I saw myself as a controller because I had years of evidence, right? And then it felt so normal to do, and it felt so risky to not do it, that I wish that I had just, right? I think we all have to go through the head to heart. But what I know now about this is that your behavior does not dictate your identity. It's your identity that should be dictating your behavior.
So good. Right? Yeah.
And so back to that willpower, I was willpowering myself through don't be controlling. Don't be controlling. You're like, oh my gosh, anything I'm resisting, it's like, it's just getting, no, what I need to be doing is I actually just need to be doubling down on who I am. Right? It's in our surrendered lives that we glorify God. We resist the enemy. We resist the lies, but we actually need to surrender. And so the biggest transformation happened. It was this gradually, suddenly, and it's still something that I still have to hold the line on, Ella. So when the controller pops up, I still have to go, oh, no, that's not who you are. So it's not that it's a one and done, but for me, it was this gradually, suddenly is actually seeing myself of, oh, I am a creative. Mm-hmm. I actually am free. I, that is who I am.
Yeah.
And that took a lot of time. And that was something that most days comes more natural, but is times that I still have to combat the controller when she pops up. Yeah. And I generally will say to her, I know this sounds crazy, but I'll be like, yo, dude, what are you afraid of right now? Because that's what control is. Control is built in fear. So what is it that you're trying to say here? And it always goes back to my limiting belief. It always goes back to being immune to someone else's problem. Now I'm going to have to hold the problem that you're creating here. So let me control this whole room, right? So that I can avoid pain. And when you understand that, now what used to take you a decade could take you 10 minutes.
Yes.
Right? You're like, you see it in 10 minutes. So it's not that you're ever done doing the work. It's that you just actually can do it faster. Mm-hmm. You can call it what it is. You can move through it. You can bind and loose. You can, I mean, there's so many things that you just do quicker and more aware. And to me, that's profound. That's huge progress.
Yeah, that's so good. That's so powerful. So tell me about something that was big for me, because I've struggled with procrastination, or my limiting belief is around feeling powerless. And so I'm not capable. I'm not and it's funny because I've broken free of so much of that. It's sometimes hard for me to fully remember how powerless I did feel and how avoidant, I was so avoidant. And so just felt a lot of helplessness. And, but a huge thing for me is, especially doing the coaching, and Nora would call me out on it. She'd be like, you're in your limiting belief. And I'd be like, no, because the facts are, I just had an insane day at work that, and then, I would literally go into shrinking, and I don't want to put myself out there. I don't want to be this powerful, I'd go all small. And then she would say, you need to lift till failure, lift till failure. and I'm like, oh, that's so helpful, because guys, when you read the book, Julia has the greatest terminology on how, what you actually need to do. And I'm like, no, Nora, I need to acclimate. I need to acclimate. And I'm like, and she's like, no, you need to lift till failure. And so tell me about this concept of lifting to failure, because I think it's something that a lot of us need on the road to transformation, because we have so much resistance to change.
I think if we're not careful, we're just going to talk general terms right now, but we just live in a world right now that they don't encourage people doing hard things, right? We live in a world that it looks like it comes easy. It doesn't. It looks like, or it should come easy. And so what happens is we start to find some resistance, and we immediately think God's doing something. I did something wrong. And we just tap out, right? We don't see the pressure as a privilege. We don't see it as an opportunity. We don't tend to lean in. We tend to tap out. And so for me, this was a huge, it was just working out, right? It was when I realized my husband so beautifully, when in the RV phase of our lives, I decided to get strong, right? And so he said to me in passing, are you lifting till failure? And I was so pissed off, the idea of the truth will piss you off before it'll set you free. Like I was so mad. And then I remember being what the heck did he just what? And it was one of those moments that my soul was oh yeah. There was, those moments when you're just the lion. I love Brandon Lake's song, come on my soul, don't get shy on me. The lift to failure concept is the same as if I were to hit the gym. You can go to the gym and work out and never get stronger, right? Because I'm just there, right? Burning calories or whatever it is. But the only way that I am actually going to grow strength is by doing more than I think I can do, to the point of failure, Mm-hmm. Right? It's like my husband says all the time, but I don't even start counting until it burns. Yeah, you find your burn and then you got to do a couple more. I'm not saying do hard just to do hard. I'm saying to pick your hard very strategically, right? And generally, if I'm being bold and I'm doing the next brave thing that God's asked me to do, or that like that's the dream, that's the vulnerable thing, that would be your hard. It's not people pleasing or avoidance. All that is hard too. So first I need to pick the right kind of hard. And then when I do, I need to realize that actually the pressure is a privilege. It's not there to break me. It's there to make me. And it's what it's doing is it's developing me to the point that it's stretching me to the point of where I'm going. Right. But I'm going to hold it. I'm going to do a few more because it's like, I'm training my body, right, to go further than I think I can go, to the point of then it's going to break itself down in order to build itself back up. Mm-hmm. Bible talks about this everywhere you'll find this interlaced, but it's a simple term for us even at home now that I'll say to my husband, how was your day? And he'll just have to look at me and go, I lifted till failure. And we just know that those days you're like, dang, I got my butt kicked, or I had to confront the lie everywhere I went, or yeah, I made more calls today than I really wanted to, but it's right. It's helping me. It's developing me, right? I'm persevering through it. And so I think if those terms, but they just make sense, you know? So it's one of those that you're like, okay, like this makes sense to me. And if I can do it in the gym, I can do it emotionally. I can do it spiritually. I can do it relationally. And so
that's so helpful.
We appreciate it.
Yeah. Like, and I think that like you mentioned, like choose your hard. And I think that, you know, often when I meet a client, I'll be like, yep, this does take hard work. And you can feel that, but life is already really hard. But I think like what it is and why I can't recommend your book more than enough. Read it. Only because like I think that life is hard and we need a roadmap. We actually need people who are further ahead than us that can say, hey, this is the way and this is what kind of hard it is. And that's why it was helpful, like having your mom be like, you need to lift till failure. And actually learning how to do that, like, or just knowing that that was what I was supposed to do at that moment. I think, and that's the importance of like community and everything, is like sometimes I'm just trying to solve my own problems in isolation. And it's like, no, I need someone outside of me to say, this is that moment where you keep lifting, you know?
Yeah. Well, and I think there's levels of awareness around this, this key that is so important, because if you're like, well, life is just so hard. Well, when you're connected to the right kind of hard, it's empowering, right? Your soul is alive, right? I say all the time, like the fire that you're wanting is on the other side of the work that you're avoiding. And so if you're just reactive in life, that will be hard. But when you choose to be proactive in life, also hard, but when you're also now in your lane, right? Limitless vision, and you're pursuing the dreams that are in front of you, also hard, by the way, just equally as hard as not, right? It's just the right kind of hard. Now you start to go, this is hard, but my soul is alive. That's a big difference, right? And so now what we're looking at is that, that the right kind of hard will also be sustainable, right? Because it's somewhere between, I'm also not going to go to the gym 24/7, 7 days a week and burn out on lifting till failure. I have to know that there's times for till failure, times to acclimate, times to rest, right? And so part of this is understanding all the tools that are in the book, but I think that the journey for most people is most people just need to be doing the right hard things, right? We just need to shift in there. And then to your point, once I'm doing that, then we do need a community that, and this, everything changed in my marriage. I kid you not, because I probably was an enabler to my husband. I wanted him to be happy, probably for my own self-preserving, right? All of us can do that. And I just thought, I just want him to be happy. And the day that I realized I'm not here to make my husband happy, I'm here to be alongside him, to be the best version of him, everything changed. Mm. And that was the moment that even in my marriage, I was like, I'll get down and do push-ups with him, right? I will get down and I will lift till failure with my community. And when my team is doing hard things, we will do them together. And when my kids do hard things, I'm like, we're going to do hard things together. Mm. And so that is priceless. What you're talking about is one, deciding to do the right kind of hard in life is step one. Yeah. Then being in community with people who are like, I'll do hard with you. Mm-hmm. Like people don't do that. Friends don't. I just had a hard conversation with a girlfriend today that she's like, nobody has these kind of conversations with me. I was like, this is ridiculous. Like we should be doing this.
Yes.
And
Yeah. So, I mean, and that's why my dream coaching group, like, they're amazing because, like, yeah, even before I left to come back to Australia, one of the girls is like, that feels like going backwards. Like, I just said something and I thought I was surrendering. And she's like, no. Like, because sometimes we're like doing the wrong thing, like the right thing at the wrong time. And so, so we need community to be like, no, Ella. Like,
that's what's so fun about this. I mean, this is like, this book becomes a language.
Yes.
I mean, it really does. It becomes a language. It's the culture. It's DNA. I mean, my kids, we talk, this is our language. This is my husband's language.
It.
This is my company. This is our language. So yeah, it's really fun.
Oh, it's so good. It's so powerful. So I guess like, as far as like courage, because this podcast is called The Next Brave Thing, I think one thing I will say about avoidance, and I love because I was noticing like the when you avoid, that's hard because of like all the pain that creates and anxiety it creates.
Yeah.
But one thing I will say is like when I started writing down, and to your point of like, or everything happens on the work that you're avoiding. Like once you take action on the thing that you're avoiding, like things will happen. And that's so true in my own life. Like I now get excited about like, okay, how can I create peace in my world? What am I avoiding? And let's go see what we manifest from this. Because I will literally have things come through now when I just address the thing that I'm avoiding. I'm like, oh my gosh, I just manifested this good experience because I decided to show up and not hide in my life.
Yeah. Which really, you know, that word is so interesting depending on, you know, your background. And but all that word manifest means is to show, means to display.
Yeah.
You know, and so I think that that's the power of that word is that we just get to show and display our vision.
Yeah.
That's what the point of life is.
Yeah.
And so, I think that's really powerful that you're seeing it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I think it's definitely powerful when you see things actualize, I guess. Mm-hmm. I didn't know manifestation actually meant to show, but I guess it means
to show, it means to display. So when people, you know, even in the church space, they go, oh, that word is, it's not a, it could be, again, anything can be manipulated, right? But all it means, even when it says manifest your kingdom come on earth as it is in heaven, that's actually meaning show and display.
Yeah.
How is that done? Through our lives, right?
Yeah.
The glory of God is made manifest through a man and a woman who is fully alive. We show the glory of God. We show heaven on earth by the way that we live our lives. And so that also proves why a dream is not about the thing. It's about who you become, because it's who you're becoming. That is actually what we're all wanting. Think about it. I want a nice car. Why? Because I will feel happy. Okay. Well, that's already in you, right?
Yes.
Like if I can become a happy person, then I can have a car and it doesn't have me, right? I can become what I want. And so then when I get it, it doesn't have me.
Mm.
That's a joy-filled person, right?
Yeah.
And so I think when you learn that, there's more flow to the process.
Yes. And you're reminding me of what Proverbs says of as a man thinks in his heart, so he is. And it's like so interesting. Like we really do manifest what's from our identity, what we think about ourselves.
Yes. 100%.
Really affects like, what we see happen in
our
world.
Yeah. I mean, look at Jesus's prayer. Prayer was not something you did. Prayer was lifestyle for him. So I think the profoundness of why the disciples asked Jesus, teach us how to pray, is they might as well have said, like, teach us also how to live, right?
Yes.
And he says, he begins it with our Heavenly Father dwelling in the heavenly realms. That's the top of Maslow's hierarchy. Maslow, you didn't actually come up with that,
right?
That's like actually putting my eyes at the top place, right? Your kingdom. And then may the glory of your name be the center in which my life turns. There's my focal point.
Yes.
Manifest from what perspective? That one, right? What am I creating from? Done, finished, complete, vision, dreams. Manifest that, show and display heaven on earth. Give me my daily bread. Give me everything I need today to do that. That's not just money or food. That's like literally being resourced from heaven in such a way that we're not trying to get it all done tomorrow or yesterday, but every day. So the prayer is really interesting to me because he's actually walking you back down this ladder of Maslow's hierarchy to basically meet every single need that we could have, but our starting point is different.
So good.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
We're not looking from the bottom up, we're looking from the top down.
Mm-hmm. That's so powerful and so empowering. Like, oh my gosh, that's so cool. You're in the middle of doing your next brave thing. And so tell us about what you're up to.
Okay, great. Our next brave thing again, Ella, had you asked me 5 years ago that I would be doing what we're doing now, I would have said, heck no. And for those people who have followed my journey, even when I wrote the book, I was not writing it for the church. I've always been a marketplace ministry, more of a growth coach, very practically, tactically helping people. And so when God asked me to write it for the church, that was a hard pass. Like, I was like, no. I think I even said, hell no, I'm not doing that. You know, it was like, I love you, Jesus, but no, you got the wrong girl. But here we are 5 years later, and our next brave yes is I'm going to pastor an online church. We launched a church called Dream Church. And our heartbeat is really just to have a global reach with a local impact. We believe in really teaching people how to be the church. I think it's gotten really easy for us to get away from doing that because we go to church or we watch church and we just really feel like our lane to occupy is to unite believers all across the world and to commission them from the comfort of their own home and then teaching them how to go and to display, manifest the glory of God. So we're building a church.
That's
we're building
amazing.
The church.
And so tell me the moment that you realized, oh, this is what we're supposed to do. What was that moment?
I think my life is like God's greatest setup. He's like, here, angels, we're going to have to do this backwards because she's going to say no the whole. I mean, ask my mom. I was the kid that she's like, hey, eat your broccoli. I was like, no. Then she'd be like, fine, I don't care. Don't eat your broccoli. I'd be like, okay, great. Yeah. But for me, it was at another point that I found myself pushing again. I don't know that I was super conscious of it because again, right, I've done all the work and you do all the things and I was very well aware, but I was pushing really hard to build my brand the last couple of years. And to be totally honest, Ella, I never wanted to build my brand. I've never wanted my name on anything. When my team came to me and said, we need to call the Dream Factory, the Julia Gentry, I was like, I don't want to do that. And I thought it was my limiting belief. My limiting belief has created a hider, right, to where I tend to hide. And so I thought it was going to be the way to move through that. And so I pushed really hard. And I really thought that I was showing up on the front lines and going to push through that. And I realized that I don't want to build my business. I want to build his kingdom. And so I was sitting with him because things weren't going as good as they should, though we were all pushing super hard. And so I was asking big questions like, God, what do you want me to do next? Because this is not sustainable. And I heard him clearly say to me, and I've heard him clearly a handful of times. Mm-hmm. I'm more of a knower. So when he speaks, like, it's like, I'm listening. And he said, your order's wrong. And I was like, what? And he said, you're building the wrong thing. He said, you're building your business. I want you to build the church. And I was like, I literally sat up in bed and I was like, Ella, it was like I went,
wow.
I can't do that. Like, it was actually one of those brave moments that you go, your intellect is like, what are you doing? And everything in you is like, I can do that. And it was within 30 days. We had taken something that we've been building for the last 10 years. I sat with my husband. I sat with my close team. I sat with some of the people like that know me well. And I was like, look, this is the blueprint.
Wow.
This is the framework. I mean, it came fast and everyone across the board was like, we saw this coming. I was like, what do you mean you saw this coming? Did you not say something? Like, you know, I was like, what the heck are you talking about? And so it was this gradually, suddenly. And it was just those moments that you just sit close enough to him and he's always speaking. It's just, you know, do we have the capacity to hear?
And I think that, oh my gosh, as you're sharing that, I'm like, I live for those God moments, like that moment where he like speaks and everything makes sense. And you don't have to be the biggest person coming up with your next strategy. Like, oh, takes the pressure off.
Yep. It's the best thing in the world. Yeah. So we're going to build his church globally and, we're having a great talk about creating uninhibitedly. There is no strategic plans. There's no Trello boards. Like, we are flowing with him. We are literally living on daily bread and it's a stinking blast.
Wow.
I feel alive. We're watching home churches being developed. I mean, we're launching with home churches right out of the gate, and people who are just hungry for the presence in their own home and hungry to really be discipled, you know, in who they are in Christ. And so we really believe that we're going to be pioneering something awesome, and that it's accessible for everybody. And we just want to take His commission literally.
Cool. And people really we need like a new church experience. And that's what I'm so, when your mom told me about it, I was like, we just need this. The world is ready for it. We're so tired of a formula that's been done for years, and we're ready for something new. And so like, I have listeners all around the world. So can they tune in from anywhere?
Yes. This is, so we have our live streams. Again, when we say global reach, I mean, we are going global. So we, there's about 3 to 4 billion people that have still never heard the name of Jesus. And so for us, we are not playing small. We've partnered with Pray.com and some really big global ministries, digital ministries. So anyone can watch. If you go to our YouTube channel at Dream Church Global, or our website, dreamchurchglobal.org/live, we're live streamed every single Saturday. It's 3 Pacific. So everyone will need to do the math, right? Wherever you're at. But our hope is that not only are you watching globally, but we don't want you to watch. We want you to be the church. And so we've created a whole network within our church for people to actually raise their hands and not only be members of this church, but actually home church leaders, where you just go, man, even if that's 2 people, you invite 2 people, we are actually giving them the framework of our gather notes. You know, it's called Ready, Gather, Go, where people just say, come gather with me. So you can invite people of your own home, and
I think what you carry is like, you bring people in and then you get people into alignment and then they're taking action. Like, you have this beautiful ability to come alongside. And so I encourage anyone who's listening, who maybe has never gone to church or never had that experience, like go check this out, because I think that we're starved spiritually, and you are so prophetic. And I think I noticed the reason why I go to church is because there's many reasons, but one of them is actually to connect with a corporate pulse of what God's doing. And so what you carry is such a beautiful listening ear to the voice of God. And I just know that anyone who comes in and needs to find a church that doesn't feel, because I can imagine for some people who's been hurt by the church, or there's been this intimidation 100%. That we're walking in a building again. And so I think it's so beautiful that you have launched this, and it feels very inviting. And we'll definitely make sure that we have all of your websites and details in the show notes. But in closing, what do you feel like, is there a charge that you would want to leave, or is there anything that you would want these listeners to sort of take away, or a charge you want to leave them with?
I mean, I think it's very similar, just even to your title week, where we're using the same word, but I think it's separate words, but very same charge, which is just do the next bold thing, right? It's bold, by my definition, is just the willingness to say yes. And so there was something that happened inside everyone listening to this today, of like, either that dream of, like, you could see it, even that idea of like, I need to be connected to church again, even though you've had hurt, but like that thing that's like, it's that soul moment where your soul opens up again. That's the next brave thing. That's the next bold thing, is just the willingness, when this piece of you, your gut, your intuition, your heart, your spirit man, whatever you want to call that, says we need to do that. Right? Like, do that and then don't stop. If you want a full life, if you want a life alive, if you want to be connected and aligned, that's the voice that we need to be listening to. And so I'm coming in. That's why I'm here with you, is like, do the next brave thing, do the next bold thing, and then don't stop. It's going to be the best life ever. It's not always going to make sense, and we don't care. Like, perfection is overrated, awkward until awesome, messy until miracle. Like, that's, you know, so that's what I would really say is just do the next bold, brave thing, and then don't stop.
That's so awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on my podcast, and I'm excited to watch your journey unfold, to see where it goes, because that's the exciting part. We don't know where it's going to go. We have some ideas, but
I know. I'm going to come to Australia. You stay
long enough, I'm going to come. That would be so fun. Oh, well, thanks for coming on.
Thanks for listening today. Please download, share with your friends, and write a review. If you would like to book in a life coaching session with me, go to my website at www.ella-hooper.com or follow me on Instagram at nextbravethingpodcast.